Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
And we're back. Now joining us to talk with us about, how do we say, American history in Chicago is Clarence Goodman. Thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's start out with you. Who are you? So we know that who you are. Like, what kind of things do you do in your life?
Well, I'm a Chicago-based entertainer and historian, tour guide, musician, all kinds of hats that I wear, but I've always been fascinated by American history, and specifically with regard to Chicago's history and Chicago's impact on American history.
Any particular reason on Chicago?
Well, I'm from Chicago. I have had the fortune of having a couple of interesting parents who and also shared a love of history and a love of reading and so forth. And the same can be said about my grandparents and aunts and uncles and so forth. But a stroke of luck actually led me to my favorite subject, which is one of my favorite subjects, which is political assassination. My birthday is April 14th. And my fourth birthday was April 14th. 1965, and that's the first birthday that you're really thinking, oh, the birthday, I've got to have a parade and a party and all of that. And that's when I heard the word assassination, and this guy, Abraham Lincoln, and I started to ask my mother, what is assassination? And she very patiently explained to me what that was, and about Lincoln, and about the fellow who had just been killed a couple of years before by the name of Jack Kennedy. And I've been kind of obsessed ever since.
And so, was there any particular one that really stuck out for you? Was there, like, you started getting into assassinations, and of course, your parents weren't worried about you becoming one, I hope.
If they were, they never told me.
Yeah. And but was there, as you were going through assassinations and kind of learning about them, was there anything in particular that drew you to one in particular that is kind of like above the rest?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Jack Kennedy assassination, yeah. I'm not sure how old of a fellow you are, but if anybody, any American with any memories of the 1960s, second maybe to Vietnam and the civil, or I should say third to Vietnam and the civil rights movement, the long shadow of political assassination is incredible, and particularly with regard to JFK's. My mother started to get misty-eyed telling me about his assassination. And then a few years after her telling me this story, Kennedy was shot dead. And I remember crying then, too. And, you know, when you're a little kid and you see your parents cry, it's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it shocked the whole country, like it hadn't been done before, you know? So now how do you, now you tie a lot of your assassinations to Chicago.
I do.
And
quite by
that. Well, and how do you do that? Like what, like for instance with the JFK one, what are the ties to that?
Oh my goodness. JFK's assassination. Well, one, Jack Ruby was born in Chicago. Jack Ruby grew up in a tenement house across the street from the Maxwell Street precinct house, which is in the near west side of Chicago, and that's the precinct house where Hill Street Blues was set, and that's and it's a haunted building, notorious for a number of torturing of prisoners. It was infamous for that. Back in the early parts and to middle part of the 20th century. That's one thing. One of the strangest things, and this is something that I discovered very early on and only started to talk about once I started giving guided tours of Chicago. I was reading a book about Kennedy's assassination, and there was a picture of Oswald's rifle, which he had ordered from a sporting goods store via catalog in Chicago called Klein's Sporting Goods. It was in downtown Chicago. And then the caption of the photograph said that Klein's Sporting Goods used as their clearinghouse the merchandise mart, as many smaller catalogs did in the middle part of the 20th century, because Chicago essentially invented mail order work. And I immediately, and this was a little kid, so I must have been preordained for this or something. I put two and two together and I said, oh my gosh, Oswald ordered his rifle through the building owned by Kennedy's family, which the Kennedy family owned the merchandise mart from 1944, I believe, to about 10 years ago. That's a huge one. Kennedy's election was masterminded and bankrolled and bullied largely by Sam Giancana, with the assistance, of course, of Kennedy's dad, Joe Kennedy, and the mayor of Chicago, the Honorable Richard J. Daley, who all met at the Ambassador East Hotel shortly after the Democratic Convention in 1960 to talk about how they were going to get Illinois and Cook County in the Kennedy column, which happened to be also the hotel Kennedy stayed in the night before he hit September 26, 1960. 3 weeks before Kennedy was killed in Dallas, a plot was uncovered in Chicago to kill Kennedy. Kennedy was due to drive in an open car motorcade, as was his wont, through downtown Chicago after leaving the airport to the Soldier Field for the Army-Navy football game. And when this plot was uncovered, literally the Secret Service canceled his trip to Chicago that day while people were waiting in line to get into the ballpark to see the president. And it goes, that just scratches the surface when it comes to the Kennedy assassination ties to Chicago. But most notably, or most importantly, I should say, it's the organized crime aspect of it. There's always been the speculation that Sam Giancana and Carlos Macellos Johnny Rosselli, that triumvirate of mafioso fellas essentially ordered the hit on Kennedy.
Hmm. And so how do you feel about it, having grown up in these areas and studying it so much for yourself without any political sort of affiliation in that sense? What was your determination of this? Do you actually think that it was the mob, and do you think that Oswald actually did do the shooting, or how do you come out of it?
Well, I was always skeptical about Oswald, and there's just too many coincidences for there not to have been some sort of conspiracy. And there are a number of wonderful investigative reporters and writers, many of whom have passed away, sadly, who spent their lives' work digging and scratching and putting themselves in harm's way, to be completely frank with you, as far as finding the truth. And I've been convinced for a number of decades that the organized crime, aspects of organized crime, based in Chicago and based in New Orleans, really put the finger on Kennedy. And then when you finally, as an assassination boss from the most lettered and revered and learned to just a ghoulish type of assassination ghouls who just are just interested in this stuff, everybody... One of the pilgrimages you have to make is to Dealey Plaza. And when you get to Dealey Plaza and you go up into the sixth-floor museum, which, of course, was originally the Texas School Book Depository, and you go to the window next to where they have rebuilt the so-called sniper's nest, there's no way in the world that Lee Oswald could have made that shot using perhaps the word, I mean, the rifle that Oswald allegedly used was jokingly referred to as the rifle that lost World War II for Italy. It was so bad. And when you see the dimensions of Dealey Plaza and knowing that he was just an average marksman, there's no way. And I was skeptical, and then I will go to my grave believing that Oswald was just, at the worst, or at the least, rather, just kind of a chump, and maybe at the most, he was kind of an indirect conspirator who didn't realize he was being set up as the patsy.
Yeah, kind of got used.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you've tied Chicago to other assassinations. What are some of the other ones that you were tying them to?
Well, the question is actually is which ones aren't tied. Oh. And this is another thing I kind of came across quite by accident. I was working for a tour company in Chicago whose specialty has been tours that are the more bizarre and strange and unusual and ghoulish. And the owners of the company were looking for some new tours to do. And so I thought, let me see how many assassinations I can tie to Chicago. And I was able, downtown Chicago specifically, and I was able to tie every major assassination or assassination attempt, with the exception of, let's see, the attempt on Andrew Jackson, because Chicago had not been founded yet or incorporated, the assassination Jackson, the assassination attempt on Harry Truman doesn't really have a Chicago tie, the assassination attempt on George Wallace does not have a Chicago tie, but every other one does, starting with Abraham Lincoln, Bill McKinley, Teddy Roosevelt, the assassination attempt of him, Garfield in 1881, Chicago tie, of course Jack Kennedy, as we said, Bob Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Reagan, John Lennon, they all have Chicago ties strong enough that a person could come up with a three-hour tour talking about all of these things, which is exactly what I did.
Wow. So now you're doing a three-hour tour on this. Are you doing this every week, or...?
I gave this tour a handful of times, and I've given this tour privately. Sadly, for me, I seem to be the only one who's interested in this kind of stuff. Since Chicago is not one of the meccas, if you will, for assassinations, like dealing with the Plaza and going to Ford's Theater, going to the National Civil Rights Museum, things of that nature, people aren't looking for it. I remember the first time I gave the tour, I had a full bus. And then the second time I gave the tour, the bus was half full. And then when a production of Stephen Sondheim's The Assassins was put on, produced in Chicago, I was going to give one of the tours as part of the opening night event, and nobody seemed interested. So there you go.
Oh.
All of that college and education wasted. Oh.
Well, why do you think that is? They just don't associate with Chicago with assassination.
Perhaps it's that people care less and less about history. Maybe it's that. Very, very few people that I meet outside of my closest circle of friends and my league, my fraternity, sorority, if you will, of people who are interested in Chicago history and the paranormal and things of that nature. They really don't care, it seems. They're more interested in the here and the now, and anything older than a year ago is ancient history to them.
Wow. It won't be long, and it'll be their life here and now will be ancient history then, right?
Yeah, sadly, you are absolutely right.
Yeah. That's just so you also I also noticed going through you're also doing tours. So about the serial killer. So when you say the first serial killer, you're probably talking about H.H. Holmes, right?
That's where it starts. Yeah, if you're doing a chronological timeline, he's the granddaddy of them all when it comes to American serial killers.
And do you give a full tour on that? So. Is the hotel still standing in Chicago that the killer castle, is it still up and running?
Oh, no. The murder castle, as it was referred to, he built in the latter part of the 1880s, and he didn't build it initially with the idea that it was going to be this World's Fair hotel. He kind of built it as a dorm that he was going to lure women to, and it was just a happy coincidence for him that, one, right after he finished building it, Chicago was awarded the World's Fair. So he had 2 years to get ready for it, and the World's Fair was going to be, the campus was going to be a very short striking distance from where he built this three-store dormitory with businesses and so forth, and then he converted it to this official World's Fair Hotel, as he called it, and it stood for many decades after not only he left Chicago, but after his own execution, and it stood until 1938 and was on the verge of being turned into a tourist visitor location, and the city of Chicago, as is their tendency, kind of condemned it behind closed doors and destroyed it, but proceeded to build the United States Post Office in part on top of the original cellar or basement or dungeon that was part of the murder castle. And so part of the paranormal and really, really seedy history of that structure and of that site is that the place, the actual part, in part, the actual portion of Holmes's murder castle where most of the murders and torturing and certainly the disposal of the bodies and the articulation of the skeletons and so forth, that remains, and all with all of its vibrations and bad juju.
So you're obviously, you believe in the paranormal in some respect. Is it a lot of reports of people seeing and having weird things happen around the post office?
Yes, particularly when the murder castle still was standing. The neighbors of that area, which was and still is called Inglewood, they would walk by the murder castle, walking their dogs, going to work or whatever, catching the streetcar, catching the elevated train, because there's an elevated track right there, and they would hear people screaming and calling out and so forth. And then after the castle itself was demolished, the superstructure or the substructure of it, many people who've worked in the post office who have not been mum about some of the things that have gone on there have been very, very candid as far as the weird sensations and the weird noises and stuff that they hear there. And then most notably, the great-great-grandson of H.H. Holmes, a writer friend of mine by the name of Jeff Mudgett, took the film team down there, and they crawled into the underbelly of this place designed by his great-grandfather. And Jeff, to paraphrase, he thought he was having some sort of seizure and heart attack because of the vibrations and so forth that he was feeling.
Mm. Yeah, actually, we just had an afternoon with Jeff and just aired his show last Monday. And, interesting person and quite the story to go through what he went through. So at that point, so they took down the castle, it's a post office, and there's still things going on. Have they been sending paranormal teams there and trying to investigate, or does people just not talk about it?
Oh, people have done it. There have been not only, Jeff's is not the only visitation to the place, but a few paranormal teams have gone there, and they've all, not only anecdotally through their human types of vibrations and so forth, but the paranormal investigators who take their EVP equipment and so forth and readings and electronic things, they've reported back that many of their findings have just been off the charts. Holmes, the Holmes phenomenon, it reaches beyond the walls or the foundation of the murder castle. I mean, the curse of H.H. Holmes continued for quite some time, extending to everybody who had something to do with him.
So what was the curse?
Well, when he was hanged back, and I believe it was 1896 or 97, just shy, I believe, of his 36th birthday, he was hanged at Moyamensing Prison in Philadelphia. And he had stipulated that he didn't want anybody messing with his body after he was passed away. So he stipulated that his body be put encased in concrete, and then the concrete encased in another coffin, and the coffin encased in concrete and sarcophagus, and then that whole thing lowered down into an unmarked grave. Well, in spite of all of that, a number of people, key players who had something to do with his trial, incarceration and execution and so forth, wound up dying shortly after he was hanged, including the foreman of the jury, the priest who read the last rites over him, the judge of the trial, key witnesses that were relatives to the young women that he had done these atrocities to and so forth. And then most notably and most shockingly, his last fraud, because, you know, Holmes was not only a master murderer but a master swindler and fraud artist as well. His last fraud was against the Fidelity Mutual Insurance Company of Philadelphia. And after Holmes was executed, their whole headquarters in Philadelphia burned to the ground. And the one thing that they could salvage from the rubble that they found was a framed picture of H.H. Holmes.
Hmm. Now, from what I hear from Jeff, is that they're going to bring up his body now, hey? And because he was buried in cement.
Right.
And to test his DNA.
Yes, that'll be very interesting.
Yeah. Lots of excitement in Chicago.
There always is.
Always is. So what other ones, is that the on your tour of serial killers that you kind of had, what other serial killers do you talk about?
Oh, well, much like the assassins, the serial killer thread runs long and meanders all over the place, and it includes what I like to refer to as all three schools of serial killers. Historians, particularly Chicago historians, and architectural buffs and the like, we are versed in that there are two schools of architecture in Chicago: school of R&B, school of hip hop, school of Chicago journalism, school of broadcasting. All of these things that are specific to the Chicago experience. There are, in my mind, three schools of serial killer. The first school being the Victorian era serial killer, which begins in the Jack the Ripper Holmes era and continues until sometime during the Prohibition Great Depression era. And mostly these serial killers in first school killed with poison, and they killed for insurance money. The second school of serial killer begins around World War II, sometime in the latter part of the Great Depression, and World War II would begin. And this was about lust and blood and murder, and rarely was the killing done for insurance money. And that lasted really, well, that continues to this day, really. And then the third school of serial killer starts at some point in the latter part of the 20th century, and it's the political manifesto lone nut person who decides that he is going to kill people as a protest against the government or the American way or something like that. And the two that come to mind straight away with me are the Unabomber and the I-95 sniper duo that was terrorizing the East Coast. And I was living out there in the Richmond to Washington, D.C. corridor where all that went down, and that was horrifying. So now that I laid that out, I'm sorry if I got a little long-winded. It's my nature, but I wanted to lay that out so we could kind of differentiate. So in the shadows of Holmes, the serial killers in Chicago, that first school, you have a man who actually worked for Holmes by the name of Johann Otto Hawk, who became known as Chicago's Bluebeard, and he poisoned girlfriends, fiancés, and wives to, I believe, the tune of a couple of dozen in the Chicago area and throughout the Midwest, and this was strictly for money. You also have Adolf Lütger, the notorious sausage fat murderer of Chicago, who ultimately was in the process of making his wife's body into sausage when he was caught. So thank goodness for pizza lovers that he was caught in the nick of time. You also have the mysterious Bell Gunness, perhaps one of the most notorious, if not the most notorious, women serial killers in American history. Then almost contemporary with her, Tilly Gaburek, who was in the same neighborhood as Bell Gunness and killed between 5 and 10 people, I do believe, neighbors and a few of her husbands, because her story is interesting, let's put it that way. And then that starts to round out our Chicago participants in the first school. Well, and then we get into the bloodthirsty second school, which includes the notorious lipstick killer on the north side of Chicago. And that, of course, then we also get into the John Wayne Gacy's and then mass murderers like Richard Speck and Jeffrey Dahmer, who reared his head in Chicago a time or two. And then just coincidentally enough, perhaps the man who has gotten the most mileage from the fewest number of murders, Ed Gein in Plainfield, Wisconsin, the man upon whom Psycho and The Silence of the Lambs are both based. His first victim was a former Chicago madam by the name of Mary Hogan. She took her money that she made and moved to Plainfield, Wisconsin, and opened a tavern, and one thing led to another, and she wound up Ed Gein's first victim. And he, if you know anything about him, he was quite a trip.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Fellow in Gary, Indiana, Darren Dion, I'm forgetting his last name, I'm sorry, a fairly recent one. One of his first victims was a young African-American kid, in addition to the other women that he killed, but she was a Chicago girl, and he murdered her, I believe, at the Motel 6 in Hammond, Indiana, as was his wont to kill prostitutes and escorts and so forth. And, yeah, those are the main ones. I'm sure I'm leaving out somebody right now. There are a lot of them. And then, of course, Ted Kaczynski is our Chicago representative for that third school, the Unabomber, born on the south side of Chicago in Pilsen and then reared in Evergreen Park before moving on to Harvard University at the tender age of 16 years old, where he was emotionally ill-equipped to deal with that kind of separation, and that was the beginning of the end of him.
Right, right. Do you think there's a reason that Chicago has so much high-profile serial killers?
Oh, sure. A lot of sociologists have concluded that the advent of the Industrial Revolution era and on, super duper metropolitan area is one of the biggest determining factors and accelerants, if you will, when it comes to the modern day serial killer. And it's not a coincidence in my mind that our serial killers begin with the Victorian era, and the Victorian era coincided with the Industrial Revolution, or at least overlapped it. And so imagine, Al, you know, growing up in a town where you essentially know everybody your whole life. Maybe you're raised on a farm, maybe you work in a general store, maybe you're a teacher, maybe you're a shopkeeper, something like that. You know all of the same people, particularly your contemporaries. Maybe you go to the same house of worship, that kind of stuff. You're all buried in the same cemetery, maybe. And then imagine that. Contrast that with living in a building that maybe has more people than your whole town, that of which we just spoke. Hmm. It kind of makes you desensitized to people and desensitized to the human condition. And all of the things, all of the stresses and pressures that we have in the modern world make way more people snap than they did 100, 150, 200 years ago. And there's a moral decay in the average Westerner, not the average person in the so-called second or third world or anything like that. Certainly, first world problems have led to first world decay in how we treat one another, and how men treat women, and how men treat children, and how men treat elderly people, and everybody treats animals, and all of these things. And then once you do it, once you cross that threshold, you've done it. And the precedent has been set. And doing it again and again and again are pretty easy. When you look at the serial killers, each one of them had a number of things in common, not just from the standpoint of their DNA and the standpoint of their psychology, but each one of them seemed to have some sort of traumatic event that really turned the tide as far as where they were going. And I don't think it's a coincidence. There's an enormous amount of time that spans between the first event, that is their first murder, and their second murder, with the including H.H. Holmes. If we're to believe everything that's implied about him, he went decades between his first murder and his second.
Hmm. And so there's the same old question, but why do certain serial killers stick out and stay with us 100 years later, whereas others that could do worse just disappear?
That's an excellent question. And then, you know what we just said about assassinations and people not being interested in history so much? Maybe with regard to serial killers, the ones who aren't in our midst, we start to romanticize about, and then films are made about them, and documentaries are made about them, and national best-selling books come on about them and come out about them. And oh my goodness gracious! Remember when The Silence of the Lambs came out? People couldn't get enough about serial killing. And then when all of the wave of forensic television shows, both staged and reality-based, came out in the latter part of the 2000s, or the early part of the 2000s. Not only did people start really getting interested in things like that, but I was working in college admission then, and the number of kids interested in being these profiling types just soared. I mean, my girlfriend's eldest daughter wants to join the FBI, I think largely because she's addicted to that television show, Criminal Minds.
So where do you see the whole serial killer thing going now? Do you think this is going to become more mainstream, more common, a lot more serial killers coming out, or is it just going to fade away with a change in times?
Probably it'll never fade. If we are to believe what a lot of cops tell us, there are more active serial killers working today and prolific than there were 100 and 150 years ago, maybe even 50 years ago. And all it takes is a television show like Dexter, or there's a show on Fox called The Following. I don't mean to give people free publicity, but these shows are really, really compelling. And so as long as these fictionalized versions keep people's interest up and so forth, and you had the Law and Order shows and all of that, then some serial killer that will come along, real serial killer that will capture the minds and imaginations of people and scare the heck out of people, and then time will pass, and then there'll be a movie about the person or a documentary or whatever, and it'll be perpetuated.
On some of these things we've talked about, so like on the the serial killers and stuff, and even the assassinations and attempts, have you read some of the people's books about any of the subjects, and have you really liked or would like to promote anybody? Is there anybody you think gets it right?
Wow, that's a great, great question. With regard to serial killers, I think Richard Lindbergh, a local Chicago author, is a terrific nuts and bolts true crime writer. And he's written, I believe, three books that are a series of walking tours of all of these infamous crime sites that you can see in Chicago. And girlfriend and I took a tour of his last summer, I believe it was, and it was fascinating. Stuff I knew about, but I didn't know where the exact building was and that kind of stuff. And he did it without agenda, without emotion, which is what people like that have to really do. There is another, oh my goodness, there's another author who has written a couple of books. And I'm sorry, his name is escaping me. If any of your listeners have seen the documentary by John Borowski, H.H. Holmes, America's First Serial Killer, there is an investigative author who, I believe his name is also Richard, but he's written a book called Depraved, and he's written a book about Holmes. He's written books about other serial killers. The filmmaker John Borowski, whose life work seems to be serial killers, is fantastic. Those are the ones that come to mind now with regard to serial killers. The assassination thing, it's almost better if a person completely ignores the Kennedy assassination, because there's sadly more books written about Jack Kennedy's death than his life, like 10 times the number of books written about his death than his life, and from every different angle, no pun intended, every different agenda, some of the weirdest, most ridiculous drivel, all the way to some of just Pulitzer-worthy journalism and investigative writing done about his assassination. We went to see a play last week for my girlfriend's birthday, all these assassination theater, and it was about Kennedy's assassination. And we were both looking forward to it, and it was very entertaining and everything. But in the last half hour, the narrative took the turn of saying how important Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy were, this, that, and the other thing, and it swayed from the facts. And you can't get emotional about these things. I don't care if you are a Republican or a Democrat or a Martian. You can't shoot the president. And that's what I care about. I care about bringing bastards to justice who shoot our president and who shoot our senators, that kind of thing. I don't care about how a person votes. And so that's how you, that's why you have to stay really, really detached. So removing Kennedy's name from the list, all of the books about John Wilkes Booth are fascinating. There was a book that came out a couple of years ago called The President and the Assassin about Bill McKinley and Leon Czolgosz, which was really, really interesting. There's very little written about President Garfield because he wasn't in office very long, but his assassin, Charles Guiteau, that might be the weirdest of all of our presidential assassins. I mean, he was weirder than Oswald, Czolgosz, and Booth rolled into one. A book about Malcolm X, which just came out a few years ago, called Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention, is fascinating from the perspective of the climate of the Nation of Islam and the hostility directed towards Malcolm once he had been kind of excommunicated by Elijah Muhammad. It's really interesting. Sadly, that author, after working on the book for 25 years, died the week before it was published, which is one of the biggest tragedies I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
I went off on a tangent. I'm sorry. I think a person will not be able to go wrong when it comes to assassination books. Just be careful with the Kennedy ones, because those almost always have a political agenda as opposed to a factual agenda.
Yeah, there's, because I've had several. Actually, speaking before, I would say we did have the director, John Borowski. His show will air the same time as yours. Great man. We had a really good talk. And now on to the assassination part. Yeah, I've had so many people on this. And you're right. There seems to be some sort of an agenda of it's usually something political, and that jades it. I'm not sure how I can take the information when they, everybody puts their own spin from what they see and believe, but it kind of makes it worse. Doesn't it blur it more for you?
Absolutely. I think the best example of that is JFK by Oliver Stone. Oliver Stone is such an avowed liberal and Kennedy fan that not only comes out in his narrative, but it, to me, taints the point of view. It taints the filmmaking narrative of JFK. Visually, JFK is a stunning piece of film, but you almost need to mute the sound because it's Stone's personal agenda as a liberal as opposed to his agenda as a filmmaker and as an historian. And I thought that, you know, that film came out 25 years ago. Yeah. A few years ago, he did a very short series of documentaries for HBO, I believe it was, of the secret history of the United States. And it was really, really interesting until he got to Jack and Bobby Kennedy, where suddenly he was like this honorary Kennedy talking about how these cats were the greatest things since sliced bread. And that makes you, if you're trying to be objective like me, it makes you just kind of cover your ears and go, la, 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 la. And my goodness, if I were conservative and trying to watch something and then started to get this narrative about history tainted by what I perceive to be a liberal point of view, it would really turn me off.
Yeah. No, and I agree totally. I just wonder but what that has done to our ability to get information out. Because on one side, yeah, he's over-glamorizing, let's say, the Kennedy brothers, and so everything is gold there, and he probably goes too far, And at the same time, you know, you want a piece of information that's just non-biased, and this is the fact, this is kind of what happened, this is where he got shot, who is, all this stuff. You try to assimilate a proper order of things, but it, you know, it's just really, it's a thin line, because if they weren't, what I'm saying is, if they weren't political in the aspect, if it wasn't about a president, and this was a movie that Oliver Stone had created about some sort of a movie star, or who knows, just or an author of a book who had written, or something in a non-political sort of thing. And he wrote in the same fashion and dressed this person up, then there it would be taken better. Do you know what I'm saying?
I get the same thing
from both sides. Because, okay, so I deal with Oliver Stone and his movie, and on his side I dealt with Judith Baker, who was the girlfriend of Lee Harvey Oswald. She said that's exactly how it was. His movie was the best thing ever. And then on the other side, I talk with Roger Stone, who's now in the political forum for Donald Trump, and with a complete opposite to it, and a complete opposite of how, to kind of bring it in, he's trying to tie it into now politics nowadays and who's running. And you can get lost so easy on where these people really are trying to bring you. It's not really about the truth.
No, it's not. My girlfriend and I, as we were doing the post-mortem about the play we saw, we were... And my girlfriend is a conservative Republican, and I'm a moderate liberal. So we have these very spirited political discussions, and she was in rare form, making me love her even more. And we came to the conclusion that it's going to take the eventual death of everybody who was an adult when either Kennedy was assassinated to look at their work objectively, yeah, and to look at the facts about their assassinations objectively and not be swept up in all of that. I mean, you can turn on cable television anytime, any day, and I bet you there is some documentary romanticizing some aspect of the Kennedy family or the Kennedy administration, many of them without merit. And that's just not how historians need to act.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. We have to be a little bit more, a little bit more to the fact.
Yep.
And less to the emotion. And, nope. and that's really tough, because the journalism world is not what it was once. So, and you're right. And so many of the people in the powers that be on for whatever party they want to claim to be, do it completely as an opposition, you know. It's really, really bizarre. So you don't really have any view on what you think happened there? I mean, as in who did it? Obviously Oswald was not, if he was involved, he wasn't the lone character. He didn't make the plot. So you've really had no real good book or source that you've gone to that you felt was kind of pretty well done?
Yeah, there's one book I read about 25 years ago, and once again, I'm forgetting the author's name, but it has to do with mafia exploits in political assassination in America, and the two main subjects are obviously the assassination of Jack Kennedy, but an even closer to the Chicago thing, the assassination of Mayor Anton Cermak, which many people thought was a botched assassination attempt of President-elect Franklin Delano Roosevelt a few weeks before he was inaugurated in 1933. And that was a classic foray of the mafia into the political spectrum. Many people don't understand that organized crime in America with regard to the Sicilian mafia, prior to the advent of Prohibition, it was about extortion, really, and kidnapping, this type of thing. And Prohibition made organized crime in every facet, and of course, and that set the template for drug money and so forth and drug cartels. That made organized crime in America what it is today. And it was during this time when the first politicians crossed these new powerful entities of organized crime that they got knocked down. So when elections started getting fixed by the mafia, I mean, Al Capone, as the junior president of the South mob, when he was working for Johnny Torrio, they fixed an election and a riot broke out. And this was really when Al Capone started to flex his muscles, as it were. And it was Capone's direct direct hand-picked successor, Frank the Enforcer, who pushed the button on Tony Cermak, and it was made to look like an assassination attempt of FDR in Miami, Florida, in 33.
So, Chicago is quite a violent town.
Yeah, there have been rumors to that for that.
Yeah, I've heard stories. Now, do you think Chicago is more so than any other city in the U.S.?
Well, certainly today, it seems like we have once again become the homicide capital of the United States. Part of the thing with Chicago is, we Chicagoans, and this is the term Windy City comes not from the weather, but how much politicians talk, we Chicagoans have a tendency to not only have the greatest city in the world, but to, at every opportunity, tell you that our city is the greatest city in the world. And goodness knows, if the Cubs win the World Series, the rest of you people are not going to hear the end of it. Let me tell you that much right now. So like I said, this is where the term the Windy City comes from. And so we are louder and brasher, and as many New York organized crime fellows in the 20s and 30s used to say, more uncouth, whereas the New York organized crime button man's preferred way to kill in the 1920s was a handgun at close range, very, very personal. Chicago, we essentially patented use of the Thompson machine gun, also known as the Chicago typewriter, because it was not used outside of Chicago, really, until 1929. So there's that. There's advertising it. You know, you can be the biggest criminal in the world, but if you're mum about it, nobody knows. If you are the biggest criminal in the world and wear the loudest, brightest colored suits in the world, Al Capone, please pick up the white courtesy phone, then everybody knows about it.
Certainly interesting. A lot of great history in your city. And now, so tell us about you, actually. Now, you are a musician, right?
I am. I'm a musician and ad hoc, jack of all trades, entertainer, storyteller, historian. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Now, are you doing albums and that right now, or?
Oh, yeah. I have a record that I call Don't Fret, myself and a few other people on songs that I've written and sing and play guitar on. I also am an accompanist, principal accompanist for a local children's music star, Miss Carol and Macaroni Soup, and I played on a couple of her records. Working on some recording projects with the brilliant lecturer and writer and leading Chicago ghost lorist, Ursula Bielski, who's also a fine musician in her own right. We're working on some experimental stuff. I just produced her first of her reading her stories, and then I perform out there. I had a gig this morning and two yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Wow, keep on going. And
somebody's got
to do it. Now you're doing the music and tours. So what's kind of how do people find out about going to any of your shows?
My website is clarencegoodman.wix.com/clarencegoodman, and I try to update it as far as my my public tours and my public shows are concerned. Of course, I'm on Facebook if anybody wants to befriend me on Facebook. And then I also have a Facebook page called C Chicago Tours, C, the initial C Chicago Tours, for updates as far as my public tours and events are concerned.
Wow. So you are a busy man.
I try.
Well, and that's good. I mean, you sound really, really happy. You sound very involved in this. This seems to give you drive. So it's obviously the right thing, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, and thank you for recognizing the excitement and the lilt in my voice, because I'm a pretty content individual. I'm doing work that I love. I live in the greatest city in the world, and I have the most spectacular woman in my life, and two nice parents who are still alive, and oodles of interesting people that I see and speak to every day.
Well, yeah, you see, and I think that's what life's about. And it sounds like you you just are totally enthralled, and I think that's great, because that's people feel your spirit, and that's important. Comes across great that way.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we've come to the end of the hour, and I appreciate this. I wanted to get a little rundown kind of what you do and what's going on in Chicago, and it sounds like a lot, and.
And,
and you're certainly a good man to be doing it. I think you're the right man for the job. And hopefully we can do it again. Hopefully we can do some catch-ups and talk again. I'd love to have you back. And maybe
I support it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to doing it again, and I certainly look forward to listening to your show featuring me.
Yeah.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of the Z-Talk Radio Network.
I'll be back.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things.
Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.